Good afternoon, boys and girls. My name is Scott Lee. I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks, Scott.
And I am so, so grateful to be here. What an honor. I'd like to open anything I do with a quote from Lois Wilson, who was asked one time what she did in a moment of silence, and she said, I invite God to the meeting. It's not that I don't believe God's here. I do believe that. I get a special gift when I stop and honor that presence. One of my great teachers, a guy named Don Pritz from Denver. If you've never heard of him, don't go to bed tonight without getting one of his talks. Don's misquoted all the time. He did not say God was a gentleman. He said he learned to treat God like a gentleman. Gentlemen don't go where they're not invited, and they don't stay where they're not made welcome. So what I'd like to propose here in just a moment is that we all literally take a moment and invite God to the meeting. If you don't have a God, allow me to recommend you borrow mine. I recommend him very highly. He's got a great sense of humor. And you can address him as a God of Scott's limited understanding. Get you off on the right foot. And then we will slowly, as I say again, slowly. I know I'm in Georgia and I was born in Atlanta. But there may be Yankees here. And I love Yankees, but I can't pray as fast as they do. And so what we're going to do is very slowly, I say again, slowly, whisper the Serenity Prayer. Let's have a moment each your own way and invite God to the meeting. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. For me, that changes it from a ritual back into a prayer. We're here to talk about sponsorship, and I have been the victim of fabulous sponsorship for a very long time. I want to tell you, we're not here as experts. We're three satisfied customers, and so that's our perspective. Not here to tell you what to do. Simply tell you what's worked for us. I want to start out with a story. There was a fellow that walked into work one morning, and his boss said, you got two black eyes. You're the nicest guy in the world. You've been in a fight. And the guy says, yeah. I said, well, what happened? He says, well, I sing in the choir. I'll tell you what happened. He said, I'm sitting there in the second row where I always sit. I'm sitting behind the soprano, and she's a rather well-nourished woman. And when she stood up to sing her solo, the cheeks of her generous south side had captured about a foot and a half of her choir robe. And I didn't think she'd want to stand in front of the choir looking like that, so I reached up and took a hold of the hem and pulled it out of there. And she turned around and hit me with a right that almost took me out of my chair. And the boss giggled a little bit, as I see some of you are. And he said, well, that only explains one black eye. You got two. He said, well, I'm sitting there kind of dazed. I thought, man, if she's that mad about it, she must have wanted it that way. So I put it back. And the moral of the story is, don't be trying to help somebody who doesn't want to be helped. They don't get any help, and you get two black eyes. And I think it's one of the core things that I need to remember about sponsorship. I do not need to be trying to help somebody that isn't ready to be helped. I'm going to turn it over to Chris here for a moment. You didn't write that down.
I'm trying to write it all down. Hi, everybody. My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. privileged to be here. I'm from just south of Knoxville, Tennessee, so very beautiful trip over here, and grateful to be sitting up here. It's the first time I've ever been recorded, so I'm scared to death. I don't like this little device, but what I can tell you is a little bit about how I got here, and it's a direct result of hanging out with these guys, and some of the stuff we're going to answer is, you know, why do I need a sponsor? You know, and I was talking to one of the guys that I sponsor on the way here, and it's because my thinking and my drinking, I don't know which one's more dangerous, but they're equally talented, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you, you know, Scott will give us so many beautiful lessons, but the one that, because I would tell you I need a sponsor because I'm dangerous without adult supervision, and that's true mostly. I would also tell you that I don't know what the truth is sometimes. Right? I'll tell you that, you know, I can come to Scott sometimes with what I think is a life-ending problem. And as I talk through that, I realize it's not a big deal. And in just normal conversation, I'll get this, whoa, 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 whoa. let's talk about what you're missing here, right? Because sometimes with my best motives, even with your, you know, with you in at heart, I can do some damage and don't even see it. And he helps me navigate that because I can't see that alone. And, you know, what I immediately started thinking about is what that sounds like is that I always call a sponsor when I have a problem. And that would not be true today, right? That's true initially. I think I called with lots of problems and lots of questions, but I think the surrender to volunteer transition has been, you know, today I find myself calling. Why I need a sponsor today is because I want to share what's happening in this deal, right? As I walk this journey and I hand this off to other people, Scott understands when no one else will, and I get to share these moments of joy and love and laughter and life together. Now, I still need adult supervision on a regular basis, right? The conversations still sound a lot like this. I don't like my wife, and she's a monster, and I, you know, Scott will tell me, well, let's pray for her, and I'll say that, you know, I can almost feel myself not wanting to say it and doing it all at the same time. I'll say, I don't want to. You know, and Scott will tell me the magic words that, you know, I didn't ask you to want to. What I asked you to do is pray for your wife. And, you know, what I can do is for some reason, right, I can navigate now that world of surrender and volunteer to where I still got to surrender to those simple things, right? How I feel isn't the most important. What I can do is take small actions, but without somebody to help me navigate that, left alone, I can be dangerous. So, the blessings, the lessons, you know, why do I need a sponsor? You know, sure, it's to initially get me through these steps. You know, when I came to you, you guys talked in generalities. You pointed out principles I couldn't find. You worked steps that we never worked, right? We just talked about them, and I was going to die from that. But they said one thing. They said, get a sponsor. And I don't know what that was for, but they said a sponsor will help you with these steps. I took these steps, and now I get to have this experience, and that's why I needed a sponsor, somebody to walk me through this journey.
I should have probably laid a little groundwork. I'm sober 39 years. I've been sponsoring Chris for about a year and a half. He's carrying a three-year chip, as I recall. And I don't know how long I've been working with Jack. To those of you who know him, I did the best I could with him. You should have seen him when I got him. But it's been, what, 20 years or something?
I think it's 10. I think it's 10.
Is it? I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, I had the privilege of sponsoring both of these gentlemen. And we're just really excited to be here. But I thought I should have made a little groundwork to make a little bit more sense. So anyway, that's it. So over to Jack for a minute.
I'm Jack. I love Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hey, Jack.
Hi, family. So I'm supposed to talk about what sponsor's job. I guess I'll preface this. First of all, my sobriety date is 12-7 and 93, and by the grace of God, if I can stay out of jail and out of a bottle between now and about 8 o'clock tonight, I'll pick up a 30-year medallion. It doesn't surprise me, but it humbles me. It really does, and I'm grateful that it humbles me. My idea of sponsorship changed when I started working with Scott back in 2013. I thought, and there was in the back of my mind, I thought it was my job to make you want to get sober and to get you sober. I thought that was my job, and I didn't act that way, but there was, I think it ended up being that way. And one of the first things that, I'll preface this by saying in 2013, I had a sponsor for about 3 years, and it turned into a relationship that wasn't proper for me. We're getting some feedback. Is that me?
Your hand in.
Oh, okay. For me, I need somebody that, and this is, again, I'm speaking for me, I need some reverence in my relationship. I have a lot of respect and admiration for Scott, and over the years it's turned into, quite frankly, more like a father to me. I don't want a friend for a sponsor. You know, we're friendly, and we have a good relationship, and I'm grateful for it, but I don't need that in my sponsor. I need somebody I feel accountable to. That's very important to me, and I didn't have that previously. In 2013, I was coaching youth baseball, and I didn't really have a program of recovery. I was sponsoring some guys. I was going to some meetings, but I had nothing to do with really the 10th and 11th step. I wasn't cleaning house on a regular basis. I had about 20 years of sobriety at that point. Anyway, I was coaching youth baseball. And things weren't going according to my will, and I was at a tournament game with some 10-year-old kids and their parents, and there was probably, I don't know, 150 parents there. And I lost my temper, and I went out on the field, and I started dropping F-bombs, and challenged one of the parents to settle things physically.
Was it a guy?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. I guess that's important. So, though my hypocrisy don't know violence. And this is in front of 10-year-old kids, right? And parents, and I completely lost it. And after the game, I got as quickly as I could. I ran over to the opposing team's parents, and I started making amends and apologizing for my behavior, asking what I can do to make it right. I spent about an hour doing that, trying to find all the parents. And I calmed down, and the next morning I woke up and I realized that I do not have a program of recovery. I really don't. I can claim that I do, but I don't. I'm not really. I'm lost here. And the remainder of that day was spent really contemplating where I'm at now, the work that I've done, the work that I haven't done, and my behaviors. Started doing kind of an inventory, and I broke down and I cried. It was a Friday. I was driving north on 75 at like 6 in the afternoon, right? So we all know what that's like. And I'm bawling, right? I'm just like, there's stuff coming out of every orifice in my face. And I was talking to a very dear friend of mine, telling her that, you know, where I was at, and in the midst of it, I said, I'd known Scott for quite some time. I hosted him speaking many years ago, and we touched base here and there. And I said, I really wish I had Scott for a sponsor. And she said something I thought was incredibly novel at the time. And she said, why don't you ask him? And it never occurred to me. You know what I mean? And another example of why I need adult supervision and I need people like Scott in my life. It never occurred to me. And I said, wow. And she said, I'm going to hang up and do that right now. And I called Scott. Now, my mind works very fast and with healthy thoughts and a healthy thought. In a nanosecond, I went through the what was going to be said and how he was going to react to it. I knew he was going to say, Jack, I am so honored that you asked me. I've been waiting all these years to work with you, right? So this is the way it's built up. I don't think I've ever shared this with you.
I'm enjoying it very much.
Keep going, right? So, and again, I'm like this, and oh, I'm going to have Scott for a sponsor. And I called him up, Scott, will you sponsor me? And there was a pause, and he said, I don't know. How long have you been sober? And I told him, right, and this is not going anywhere near the way I had planned, right? The carpet's not laid out. He's not in tears in gratitude because he gets the opportunity to work with me. And he ended the conversation, said, well, you know, I'm not supposed to take on anybody new. He was in that phase in his life at that point per his sponsor's instructions. I can't take on anybody with less than 5 years, and I really don't know if I can sponsor you. I'm going to have to call my sponsor. Very deadpan, right? And call me tomorrow. And that was very unfulfilling. It was very unfulfilling. And nowhere near my expectations. But, you know, there's a lot to be learned right there. Because Chris and I were talking about this coming up, is that, you know, I've got this thing I want to talk to you to my sponsor. And I've rehearsed the whole conversation in my head. This is what I'm going to say. This is how he's going to react. I'm sure none of you can react to that, relate to that, right? You know, and he's going to say this, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to get this assignment, or he's going to, you know, whatever. And it never works out that way. It never works out that way, but I still build these things up, you know. Anyways, I called Scott the next day, and he said yes, and he said let's set the ground rules, and let's have an understanding of what we're looking for here. And he said, my job is to love you and coach you through the steps, and that's it, is to love you and coach you through the steps. Over the years, that's expanded, and I understand, and some of the biggest lessons he shared with me is his pain, his shortcomings, his mistakes, you know, the times he showed his butt, because we all do. And in doing that, he opened up the door for me to become open and vulnerable to him when I needed to. And over the last 10 years, Scott has seen the worst and the best of me. I've experienced a lot of life. We have life. You know, just because we got sober doesn't end. And a lot of things, including mental institutions and physical violence and infidelity and severe mental illness. And Scott's been through it all. And because he set that tone in the beginning, it was never a problem to call up and say, look, here's where I showed my butt. Here's the mistakes that I made, and here's where I feel shame. And I can come to him and never... never once was it met with anything other than love and compassion and tolerance and a hug. I'm proud of you. I love you. What can we do about this moving forward? That has made me a much more fulfilling sponsor. When I say fulfilling, I mean I feel like I'm being much more effective. I'm not judging. You know, it's an amazing deal, and I never had that before. And I don't mean to speak ill at all of the men that I've had the privilege to work with in the past. Not at all. It's just it's different, and it's much more fulfilling for me. And I tell the gentleman that I work with the same thing. I said, let's talk about some expectations. What are you looking for? And if it's unreasonable or it's something like, you know, you need a banker, a lawyer, a divorce attorney, you know, that's not my job. Now, I can share some experience on a lot of those things, unfortunately, or fortunately. I can share a lot of experience. But really, the best things I can share with them, again, are my mistakes, my shortcomings, my pain, you know, and open up that door so it's okay when those things occur. I thought for many years, that my job was to be super sponsor guy, right? That I make no mistakes and I live this perfect life and I'm doing this thing perfectly and I wake up and I do this and this and this and this and I'm regimented. And that's the way, that was my belief of the way this thing should be lived. Not worked, but lived. And I sponsored in the same way. So they never saw my frailties, right? Now it's a better thing. It's a better thing for everybody. It's honesty is what it is. They told me early on that, you know, your life's not going to be perfect just because you're sober, Jack. There's going to be storms, but you put one hand in your sponsor's hand in the fellowship and the other in God's hand, and we're going to find the calm and the storm together when these things occur. And that's been absolutely true. And as I said, I've been through some things in sobriety, and I never wanted to drink through any of it. By the grace of God, you know, I've had this spiritual experience, a change in outlook and attitude upon life and myself and my perspectives has changed and grown through the years. I have never wanted to pick up a drink. I've wanted to put a gun to my head. I want to put a gun to your head. But I don't do that one day at a time. And I call my sponsor and say, I'm pissed at everybody and I'm angry because there's not more people to be angry at, right? Or whatever it is. But there's an open channel of communication there. And I still am fearful sometimes, but there's no proof in that. But that's my disease talking to me. I want to talk about a couple things, and then I'm going to pass it on, I guess, to Scott, who's going to touch on a really cool subject. And one is, you know, the definition of a sponsor. On page 96, it tells me some really interesting things. I'm gonna touch real quick on this chapter, working with others, and I didn't read this because I was better, because I knew better, right? It took me a long time before I got into this, but this is an amazing, if you have the patience to read this, this is amazing when it comes to helping other people. I'm going to be a 96 right now. This is amazing. It tells me what to do under what circumstances I meet them, when I meet them the first time, when I meet them the second time, when things go wrong, when it's time to let them go. And I suppose we can touch on that at some point. But if I look at the second full paragraph on page 96, it says, suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read the volume, the big book, which means in the first visit you gave him the book and you gave him some instructions. He's read the volume and says he's prepared to go through the 12 steps. That means he's willing. He's willing to go to any length. He's sponsorable. He's sponsorable at this point. If he's sponsorable at that point, now I'm not forcing him to get sober. My idea of getting you sober, there's men that in my first 5 or 10 years of sobriety that have knots on their head to this day from me hitting them in the head with a big book. Right? You're going to get sober. You're going to get sober. You're going to get sober. You know, one of the most beautiful and valuable lessons I learned from Scott is that it's not my job to convince you of the first step. It's just the opposite. You got to convince me you're powerless, that you believe you're powerless, and that your life is unmanageable. Because from there, we can work with it, right? Unless they are that way, unless they believe that, conceded to their innermost selves, moving forward is almost unnecessary because I can't really help them, and I can't convince them to that. I'm not going to say no to them. But it says, we read the he's prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, I'm properly armed with facts about myself, which makes me uniquely capable of helping people when others can't. you can give him much practical experience and, excuse me, practical advice. When do I start the steps? We're going to get into that a little bit later on in how it works, but then I'm going to pass on to Scott for that.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. I love that. That describes sponsorship in two sentences. Somebody who's read this book, by the way, if you had the experience, you try to read something, as your eyes move across the page, your mind moves across the solar system. What I find is if I read out loud, it traps my mind in a moment. That I find that to be very valuable with new people whose brains are ricocheting around like a golf ball hitting a bathroom. If they read out loud, it helps a lot. Fifth sponsor died in office. It was Don Roy. If you're from Nashville, you would know that name. He started the Music City Roundup and ran it for many years. He started Central Office and was the manager of it for many years. And I was sober 11 years, and he went home to die. They told him at the hospital, "We can make you comfortable, get your affairs in order, it ain't going to be long." And he went home to die. And I, with my shiny 11-year chip, couldn't figure out he would actually die. And he did, very inconsiderately. And left me without a sponsor. And I was unprepared, because I am not a skyrocket to success here. And I thrashed around for about 2 weeks trying to looking for a sponsor and realized I don't know what I'm looking for. And I believe what I'm about to tell you. I went to the source and I said, "I think I need some help here." And what I got was an idea. And the idea was, why don't you inventory the 5 men that have sponsored you so far? As individuals, they were quite different, but they must have had common characteristics. Figure out what those are, and you'll know what you're looking for. So I sat down and thought about it. Well, they were sober men. You do what you do. I don't have an opinion. I don't sponsor the ladies. The ladies don't sponsor me. I haven't seen an unattractive woman since the summer I turned 12 years old. And I don't need to get confused about what's going on here. So it's a sober man who's actually done the steps. We just saw here the sponsor's primary responsibility is to take me through the step work, make sure it remains solid. And my home group, which is the back room at Nashville, Tennessee, they say you can't anymore give away something you ain't got since you come back from somewhere you ain't been. So it's got to be a sober man who's done the steps, who has a sponsor himself. Hopefully he's surrendered to somebody, definitely. But now I take him the question he can't answer, we got a plan. Sober man has done the steps, has a sponsor, tell me the truth I don't want to hear. You're a lot more interested in saving my life than my face. Someone who is active in service. The winners are all doing something to give it back. They show up early here and make the coffee, and they clean up the place. They take meetings into jails and treatment centers. They serve the group as GSR and trail. They do something to give. There's something inside that drives them to do something to help somebody else get this thing. They're active in service. And the sixth characteristic is on page 132. It's in the dead center of the page. That would be 17 lines from the top and bottom and 2 words in from both margins, where I think it may say, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. Got to be somebody who's having a good time. I see people getting sourpuss sponsors. I can't figure that out to save me. Why would you do that? No. Find somebody that's having a good time. Now, if you're new and don't have a sponsor, what you might want to do is you spot somebody in a meeting, and they're going to be saying things like, my sponsor said, or when I work step number, this is what happened. Or the book says on page, these are the kind of things you're going to hear them saying. And you're going to see them grinning a lot. People who do this thing, the life just becomes funny. And so you go up to them after a meeting and say, can I ask you some personal questions? If the answer is no, it's not your guy or gal. Are you active in service? Have you done the 12 steps? Do you have a sponsor yourself? If you're new, my guess would be you're thinking, man, I'd be nervous. I'd be uncomfortable doing that. Good. Because if you're like me, doing what makes you comfortable is how you got into this room, chasing being comfortable. So one of the things we know for sure about recovery is I'm going to be doing some things that I'm not comfortable with. It would be a very good place to start. If you can find some of those six characteristics, I'll go with them again. The first characteristic is the sexual component is out of the equation. Whatever that means for you, that's what I recommend. All right, that's out of the equation. For me, it's a sober man who's done the steps, who has a sponsor, who will tell me the truth I don't want to hear, who's active in service, who laughs a lot. And say to him, if you will sponsor me, I do exactly what you say. I never argue with you once. And make that stick. If you do that, a year from today, you'll have tears running down your face about how magnificent your life is. And if you don't do that, I hope you land back here, because things are tough. I've never seen that miss. I have only seen two people I know for absolutely certain who did what I just described go back out, and only two. I sponsored both of them. I'm on page 164. I did not know we were going to cover this. There are two fellowships referenced in the book. Fellowship of AA that you're in when you say you're in it. No one can say you're not. There is a second fellowship. It's referenced on page 164. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Fellowship of the Spirit has different entrance requirements than the fellowship of AA. They look to me like the steps in narrative form. My experience has been the people who get into the fellowship, I've never seen anybody who was a member of the fellowship of the Spirit go back out. I've seen quite a few members of AA go back out. The two guys that I know did this work, because I sponsored them both, I know they did what's in here. Both went non-current. One of them married this new higher power. And we said, I wonder how she... And she didn't like how much time he spent with us. She said, I wonder how she likes him now. Well, that information was in the legal notices in the newspaper not real long after that. Which divorce is ignorant, but... And he's back today carrying, I believe, a 14-year chip. The other one's a hotel manager. He started running a dude ranch in Arizona, 40 miles from the nearest meeting, and quit going. And 2 years later, he drank for 2 weeks. Today, he's sober over 20 years. So only two people I know for certain did what's in this book. They went back out. And what I like to say is, they allowed their membership in the fellowship of the Spirit to lapse. And when that membership lapsed, they relapsed. When they re-upped their membership in the fellowship of the Spirit, they got healthy again, and they're doing just fine. That's where the magic is. I got my own definition of insanity. It's thinking you're in a 12-step program and not actually taking all 12. If you haven't taken all 12, you're not in a 12-step program. And you spend a Saturday afternoon with us, you must need some kind of help. You might want to think about getting into one of the 12-step fellowships. So I did that inventory, and there stood Ice Cream Steve. And I said, Ice Cream, would you sponsor me? And he said, no. Oh, I'll pray about it. Call me tomorrow. I called him the next day. He said, I'll sponsor you. I said, great. And Steve, hear me clearly. I'm a surrender to you right this second. That's all I know how to do. Don't give me 150 hoping I'll do 100. You give me 150, I'll do 200. That's what I do. What do you want? So many meetings a month, so many jails, so many treatment centers. Follow directions to open and close your day. He laid it out for me. And one of the things he gave me was exact opposite what Don had me do. I mean exact opposite. And I didn't even tell him. They started doing it the other way. I'm not here to discuss that. About a year later, I spoke at a conference, and I mentioned in my talk that my new sponsor had me do something that was the exact opposite. He heard the talk, and he called me. He said, I said, yeah. And he didn't ask me what it was, and I didn't tell him, and I ain't telling you. Ha! Because that's not the point. The point is my sponsor is final authority on my program recovery. And if he's not, I'm back to ISM, alcoholism, ISM. I sponsor myself. That's what ISM stands for. Yeah, I'm back to that. If he can't be final authority. Because that's what I need. Not to run my life, but to run my program of recovery. And the fact is, tomorrow is my sponsor's AA birthday. He picks up a 56-year chip tomorrow. And when he talks, I listen very closely. He's wise counsel on a lot of things. But his primary job is to make sure my spiritual program remains in good tact. That's what it's about. So that's, this for me, the characteristics of an effective sponsor. That has worked for me. I wound down. You didn't know what was going to happen, did you?
So fully understood the countdown, 39 years, 30 years, and then I sit here usually with still amazed that I've been sober for 3 years and usually just perpetually overwhelmed. So I'll do my best to follow that with something that makes sense, because the next topic we had is red flags to be looking for. And in sponsorship, I guess I can only tell you what happened. I couldn't give you a list of bad things to look for. What I can tell you is what I saw happen, and then what's really important for me today. I remember when Scott had mentioned something. When we get sponsors, we're all going to have some information that we believe is what's important. And I heard him say, whatever your sponsor said is right. And I thought, man, the humility that must take, right, to never just to set aside all the challenges or not to throw a big book at you, but the ability to say, you know, whatever your sponsor said is right was important to me, right? It meant I didn't have to be right anymore. And then the next thing, you know, a red flag for me, Scott has said this before, available to me, right? I need contact with somebody, and I saw this happen. Well, there's two things. I'll share with you what Scott did and then what I saw happen to me. When Scott was about to, somebody had asked him, another one of us came to Scott and said, will you walk us through this thing? And what he did before he told this person yes was check with each of us and say, do you get enough of my time? And I thought, man, that is, how important is that? Right? Before I'll give another commitment, because I do the opposite, right? If you ask me, I'm like, yeah, let's go. It doesn't matter. I'll get a divorce. I won't see my kids. I'll quit my job. that's what I do. But, you know, he checked with us first, and I thought, man, you know, that was important to me. Available to me, right? Because if I do call and I do have a problem, you know, I've got a problem. It may not be a real problem, but it sure, right? Real or perceived, it's a problem right then, you know, and I need to know that I can call somebody. And then I heard this other person was talking about, they were sponsoring this, I don't know, engineer or NASA astronaut, and super smart, and this person was like, you're the best sponsor I've ever had. And the guy was like, I don't even understand what you say most of the time. And they're like, how can I be the best sponsor? And they said, because you're there, right? And I think that was the message, right? Sometimes I don't need to have this massive, I just need to be there, right? And that's what I've done with the guys that I've had the chance to sponsor. I don't do much special other than take these lessons, my experience, and show up with them, right? Showing up was a big deal. But the other red flag, I would say this was it. I was in a meeting one time and I heard a new guy sharing, and the share was, I'm new, I'm scared, I'm looking for sponsorship. This guy said he'd sponsor me, and I've called him 3 or 4 times, and he won't answer the phone. Hmm. And I thought, there it is. That's the deal, right? That's what I can, you know, because Scott's told us there will be those that teach us what to do, and those will be those that teach us what not to do, right? And my deal was to never overcommit and to keep those commitments. And when you call, I may miss you right then, but I remember, I was so scared. Like, these guys all scare me to death, right? I don't know what I'm doing. I have a lot of, and it's not that I'm scared. I have a lot of respect for what they do. And I had called Scott, and I, once again, you know, I was just convinced my wife's bad, and I need to, you know, I've got to get out of this deal. And, you know, the one thing I would worry about is if you don't have the experience, you can't help me. Scott said, I've been divorced twice. Don't ask me. Call somebody else. And I said, well, that's kind of good advice. But he said, call Don Major. He might have something to say about that. Right now, I've been listening to Don Major on places like WeJoy and like that forever. And Don's one of those guys that, you know, a red flag would be you don't want to be next to him. The reason you might know is because when these guys like Scott's and Don's and people walk in the room, something about them draws you to them. Right, I want to be next to them. I don't know. They don't even have to talk. But I called Don, really honestly, hoping he wouldn't answer the phone. Is the problem? That's usually what I'm doing, is calling, like, just so I can call Scott back and be like, yeah, I called, he didn't answer. Because I do like doing my sponsee homework. I love calling my sponsor and being like, I did the deal, man. I'm doing what I'm told, because I've had such a hard time with that in my life. But the problem is, you know, the things I'm going to look for, these guys answer the phone and they show up. You know, Don immediately answered the phone. I don't know how busy he was. I could hear, you know, he's a lawyer with a lot going on. He does all kind of crazy stuff, and you could tell there's chaos. And he says, hey, want to let you know it's not a good time. Can I call you back? I said, but yeah. And like 4 minutes later, he called back. You know, and then we proceeded to have a conversation that left me so overwhelmed in a parking lot that all I could do was sit there and cry. Hmm. You know, just completely overwhelmed at the levity, just the whole, they were there, right? And then the message, right? And now I can go home and have this experience. So I can't tell you as much about red flags, but I can tell you that available to me, right, was a big deal. And that today, you know, Scott will say crazy things like, you can pretend to care. I got really good at that in my life, right? But you cannot pretend to show up. And that's what these guys do. They show up. Thanks for letting me share.
You got to follow that.
Yeah, I'm not following that. Go ahead.
Thanks for nothing.
We've got an agenda here that we put together. We're kind of trying to follow, but we're unsupervised.
Three blind mice.
I'm supervised. I want to be clear.
Well, that's the illusion you have, and I think you should stick with that.
That was beautiful. Don Major and I were very good friends. We had many, many deep conversations, and he was. I don't know if you don't know the name, your education is badly lacking. Get some of his talks. He was probably the best we'll ever have on Step 6 and 7. Magnificent man. Had the privilege of attending his going away party, memorial service, I think is what they call it. And I knew he'd talk to you. It'd be beautiful, because he's just another drunk like me. I'm just a nose puker doing pretty good today. Yeah. Go ahead, Jack.
Okay, what am I supposed to talk about here?
The first meeting with the sponsor.
Yeah, so thank you, Chris. I was all prepared. I had something to say, and all the beautiful memories of and gratitude you brought with you when you talked have got me all confused. First meeting with a potential sponsee and expectations. So one of the things I learned from Scott is, you know, I was told, you know, give out your number, and that was great. The first thing Scott told me to do is you get their number and you call them. You get their number and you call them. You know, I was in sales for a long time, and one of the things I learned in sales is I have to put myself in your shoes. I got to understand who you are and what your needs are so I can better help you, right? And the same is true with this sponsorship thing, right? I get your number, right? And I give you my number, and I call you. I'll usually call the same day, depending on the person and where they're at, knowing what their schedule is. I'm big on qualifying. So when somebody comes up and says, you know, will you sponsor me? I ask questions, right? I want to get to know who you are. I do a lot less talking at them, bless you. I do a lot less talking at them than I do listening and asking questions. So I can prepare myself. How can I help this person? The more I know about you, the more I can help you. And then I will call, right? The first time I meet with somebody, I set out the guidelines, like, you know, what are your expectations? We're going to talk about what are your expectations, and this is what I can, like, this is what I can offer you. And I also tell them that I may not be the right person for you. I don't know any of this. Just because I got 30 years, there's some days I don't look like I have 30 years. I'm completely imperfect, right? And maybe I'm not the right person for you. I just let go with somebody a couple months ago, and he's thriving with somebody else. Absolutely, and I couldn't be happier. You know, it doesn't feed my ego anymore. It did in the beginning, but like I've got six sponsees, you know, and that was like a big thing. And I came from, there was a time when Bob D out of Las Vegas, you may have heard his name. He was my sponsor. He was working with Clancy at the time, so it was in that lineage. And at the time, Bob was sponsoring like 106 guys, right? And I had my time Tuesday at 9:15 that I had to call him, and that was it. That doesn't really work well for me, but my first meeting is the expectations, and get an idea of where they're at, especially what their schedule is. Right away, I don't want to know what their schedule are. Are they a married man? Do they have three kids? Is he coaching baseball? Is he doing volunteer work here? How much free time does he have during the day? And I'm doing this to try to better help them, but also setting them up, because the time is going to come with some people are going to say, well, I don't have time to do this inventory. I don't have time to do this. I said, really? Well, Tuesdays from 8 to 12 or 8 to 10, you're completely free. You could be reading the big book, right? You could be chairing a meeting. You could do all kinds of things. And I don't do that to throw it at them. I'm just pointing that out. This is what you need to do. And some people just don't realize it. I tell you, one of the things that I learned in this program, I had no idea about time management when I came in here. I did what I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it. And I overcommitted myself, and I felt guilty all the time because I had no time management skills. And by no fault of my own, nobody ever told me. They didn't teach me about the importance of that. And what I found, and I'm not perfect at it, but what I have found that in my life is a lot more peaceful because of that. I go to this meeting at this time, it takes me this amount of time. I get off of work at this time and I can do these things. I give myself time in the morning for a quiet time to read a couple of books and do nothing and relax, right? Because then what I want to do is jump out of bed and attack the day. That's never been effective for me. But when I slow down and I ask God to work with me, I'm going off track, I apologize. We set the guidelines on what the expectations are, right? I get an idea of who he is and how we can go through this thing and the time constraints that I have. And as Chris mentioned, it's very important. Do I have time to serve you the way that I need to? Because for years, I always said yes no matter what, right? Because I was told early on, don't say no to an AA request. You've heard that, right? I heard that very early on. That's true. But I have to be reasonable, too, with my time. If I've got two sponsees, I'm working 55 hours a week. Do I have time to take on another guy and see him once a week? Enough time to do his fifth step when the time comes? Right? Is there time in a set time for me to take his call and not be distracted? These are all things that are important. This, and I'm going to pass with this, but I heard once at a sponsorship panel about 20 years ago, somebody say, well, this is not personal. You can't take it personal. No, you're right, I can't take it personal, but it is fucking personal. Excuse me, it is personal. It's very personal. I came in here and I didn't want to drink one day at a time, and I didn't want to blow my head off one day at a time. That's where I came in here. I didn't need the take the cotton out of yours, stick it in your mouth, shut out, make the coffee. I didn't need that, right? I needed someone to teach me how to love myself because I did not. Low self-esteem was an improvement when I came in here. I needed somebody to honor that. We're talking about saving people's lives here, all right? I'm not doing that. I'm the tool to do that. Let's get that out there, right? But that's very personal. Somebody has asked me to guide them on a spiritual journey. I don't know how more personal that can get. I don't want to get overloaded in what that looks like, but I'm looking at this list right now. I call my death list, and I've got 15 names on that of people that I've buried, and I sponsored five of them. That's pretty personal. I love these men. I'm honored to be able to help them. I'm honored to have something to offer that's of value that people can actually use. But yeah, it's personal. It's very personal. And when you ask me to work with you, it's very personal to me, and I'll do everything that I can. I can't get you sober. I can't keep you sober. I'm a pipe. I'm just carrying a message. And on a good day, I'm a faucet. All right? That's all I got.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. We've got an Ask It basket out here on this table. We're going to take a break here in a few minutes. And at the end here, we're going to do, I call it questions and dumb looks. I don't want to overpromise. We may or may not have answers, but we will definitely have dumb looks. I tell somebody new that I sponsor, this is a newcomer, and I haven't had a newcomer in quite a while. Tom, if you don't know that name, please don't go to bed without getting a couple of Tom's talks. It's my immediate past sponsor. And I had 25 years when he started sponsoring me. And one of the first instructions he gave me was the one Jack talked about. He didn't want me to take anybody with less than 10 years to sponsor. And boy, that rubbed my fur the wrong way. And I don't say why to sponsors, but I did this time. I said, why not? And he said, I with 50 years, if I said yes to every newcomer that asked me to sponsor him, when you with 25 needed a new sponsor, I would have had to tell you no, because I wouldn't have had time. And I want you, because you got 25, you got to be ready for the people that have got 10, 15, and 20 that need a new sponsor. You got to be very careful about taking newcomers, because you got to be here for these people that have got time that start to need it. And that rubbed my fur the wrong way then, but I'll tell you, I've lived into it. I got a lot of people, and I broker sponsorship all the time. I will capture, if the new face comes into my home group, guy or gal, within a minute, I will know how long they're sober and whether they've got a sponsor. And if they don't, I will say, probably what you need is a temporary sponsor to get you kind of started while you look for a sponsor, because they don't know what's going on here. So you get a temporary sponsor. You know you're going to change. They know you're going to change. It's no big deal. got a friend over here I think can make a good sponsor for you. So it's a girl, I walk up to a girl, it's a guy, I walk up to a guy and say, can you be this person's temporary sponsor? I mean, you know they're going to change. So this is something a newcomer can say yes to. Give them a chance to get started. It's one of the things that I asked the men I sponsor to do. And to not give their phone numbers to new men. It's a waste of time. The new guy can't call. It's nothing for me to pick up the phone and call him and say, we met at the XYZ meeting last night, and we exchanged phone numbers. I told you I was going to call you today. Here I am. One of my spiritual mentors, I talk to at least five men every day that are in recovery. You're on today's list. How you doing? I'm going to the ABC meeting tonight. Why don't you meet me there? We'll chat. Nothing for me to call him. He can't call me. If somebody tells me they can't find anybody to sponsor, it isn't that hard. You start doing that in a month, you won't be able to swat them. You will not be able to swat them. You will never keep up. Anyway, so expectations have to do, well, let's go ahead and start the work. One of the, page 58, the most read, least and listened to portion of our literature, there's a sentence in there. If you decide that you want what we have, or we're going to go to any lengths to get it, I don't know how many meetings I've been in where that was the topic, and they missed the end of the sentence. What is the any length? It says, then you're ready to take certain steps. I've always wondered what steps they were talking about. I'm idly curious. Could it possibly be those? Maybe. I don't know. So that's the any length. And I have yet to see anybody work the steps too fast and go back out. I've seen maybe 10,000 go too slow. The magic for me is in the step work. It's where they start digging the poison out of my soul. I start a guy, I'm a newcomer that I'm sponsoring. I start him sponsoring by the time I get him to step 9. Because yes. By then he's got message. He's in the process of spiritual awakening. He's done a thorough 4-step. He's been through the forgiveness process in step 4. I hope you know what I'm talking about. He's got a lot to carry. And what we do is we find him a newcomer. And we get that newcomer's permission, blanket permission, for my sponsee to talk to me about his sponsee. And I will coach my sponsee through coaching his sponsee through this work as many times as necessary. I mentioned Don Pritz earlier. I asked him, about 2 years apart, asked him the same question. The first time I said, what's a sponsor's primary responsibility? And the first time he said, it's to maintain the integrity of the message. I asked him 2 years later, what's a sponsor's primary responsibility? He said it's to not allow the sponsee to settle for relief, but to get him all the way to recovery.
Ooh.
By the time he gets to step 8, he's got relief, right? He's been promoted at work. He brings the entire paycheck home. He knows where all the dents in the car came from. His key fits in the front door. That's a miracle. He walks in. They don't scatter. Another miracle. He has a phone. It rings. He answers. Another, and admits it's him. He's sleeping in the big bed again. Now, he may not have crossover privileges, but he's back in the big bed. So he has lost some of his motivation. Part of my job is to keep him moving.
Yes.
And I get him sponsoring a new guy. It doesn't take him long to figure out that he doesn't want his new guy to get to 8 before he finishes 9. It really helps keep him moving. It really helps. And so I coach him through coaching. And I don't care how many times we have to do that. A very close friend of mine in Nashville, I don't sponsor him anymore. I bet I took him through maybe 15 guys on step 4 before he finally got it. He just couldn't seem to get it in his head. And I did it with a smile every time because I believed Don was right to maintain the integrity of the message. And the only way I can do that is to take him through it a small piece at a time as necessary. As necessary. For those who are about to start sponsoring, page 159... there's a powerful sentence on here. We're going to be talking about 3 individuals. The individuals' names are Dr. Bob Smith, Bill Dodson, AA number 3, and Ernie Galbraith, AA number 4. Paragraph begins at the bottom of page 159, first sentence. A year and 6 months later, these 3 had succeeded with 7 more. Those 3... in a year and a half of access to a hospital full of drunks, only succeeded with 7. They're not all going to make it. Scott's rules of sponsorship. 2 rules. Rule number 1, if they're ready, you can't do it wrong. If they're not ready, you can't do it right. It ain't up to you. Rule number two, don't take credit for the ones that make it. Because if you do, you're going to get the blame for the ones that don't. Some of them are going to die and some are going to prison. And if they're ready, you can't do it wrong. And you don't have to know it all. Just because your sponsor answered all of your questions doesn't mean you have to be able to answer all of theirs. You've got to sponsor yourself. You've got access. We can go find out. It's an important piece. We're gonna take a 10-minute and 22-second break, and I'll see you back here. Put some questions in the basket.
Please.
Go away. Hi, I'm Scott Lee. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Scott.
Let's take a few moments and acknowledge the presence of deity, and I'll just meet you back here. Amen. I don't know where we are on this thing. Jack, are you next?
Sure, why not?
Go for it.
AA as such could never be organized. When Scott and I put this format together, there was some confusion after the editing, and we're working on two different formats, so I guess I am up, and I'll follow yours. I'm supposed to talk about something intelligently.
Yeah,
about,
that'd be good, about when and how to change
things. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna double back a little bit and cover something I wanted to cover before. I'm Jack. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Hi, family. I'm honored to be up here. I don't do anything better or whatever. I just do what I do, and I'm not an expert. Like, none of us are. We're just sharing, what works for us. I've heard a lot of, over the years, people saying, well, when am I supposed to start the steps? You know, when am I supposed to do this? It took me a lot of years, and with Scott's help, I discovered a lot of things in this book, and it tells me exactly when I'm supposed to and why I'm supposed to do it. And it tells me when I'm supposed to start the next step, if I read it carefully. I'm very absent-minded and shiny thing guy, right? Like, oh, like so it's hard for me to grasp things if it's not in a step one, subsection A, B, and I go down this line, right? Because the book is not written that way. But that's the way my brain works. So it's taken me a lot of years of reading this thing and forgetting a lot of stuff and rereading it and calling Scott and saying, that's amazing. Did you know this was in here? And he laughs and says, yeah, that must be the fifth edition, Jack. Scott once told me that his definition of a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening is when I finally get what you've been trying to tell me for the last 6 months. You know, I can't grasp it right away. I got to hear it over and over sometimes. And when I'm in the right frame of mind, yeah, you're laughing. I hear that. When I'm in the right frame of mind, then I hear that message. You know what I mean? So I got to be real careful about judging things and saying things is not right or this is right or this is wrong. Hell, I don't know. I just don't know. My perception to this day can be so skewed. Can be so skewed about a situation, but particularly and most importantly about me and myself and where I'm at, and that's another reason why I need a sponsor. Scott knows me better than any man on the face of the earth, man or woman, better. I was married for 20 years. He knows me better than she does. And that's the way it should be, and that's what works for me. When I come to him, he already understands who I am, where I came from, and what I've been through. And because he's done a lot of good listening, he understands how to communicate with me and how to help me. At any rate, if I look over, and Scott touched on this on page 58, there's some things that are very hidden in here, as Scott would say, that we conveniently hide them, and we read them at every meeting. Our stories are told in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. If you have decided, a decision, that you want what we have, so I went to Scott because I'd made a decision. I need to go through this whole thing from the beginning. I don't know anything. I'm desperate again. Thank God. After 20 years, I was desperate. He had something that I wanted. And I was willing to go to any length. That prepared me for something, and that was that last part of that sentence, that I was ready to take certain steps. It tells me when I'm supposed to start these steps. Now, I'm not starting them now. We're going to talk a little bit more about what's going to happen. And they're going to get back to another question on page 59, another explanation on 59. I hear a lot of talk about my program and his program. I was about 6 months sober, and the man who was taking me through the steps, I was talking to him at a clubhouse very much like this in Phoenix, and one of his guys came up to him, and he's a mess, right? He's 30 days sober, and his life is a mess and he's frantic, and he says, I don't think my program is working well. And deadpan, he turned to me and says, why don't you try our program? And the guy was amazed. It was like an acid moment, like looking at a Labrador, and they go, you know, he never thought about that. But that's true. Well, what's the program? A lot of people talk about it, right? I love Scott's recovery. I appreciate his recovery, and I try to mimic that the best that I can. But it tells me on page 59, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. The steps are the program. Maybe one of the biggest lies that I tell myself, and I've seen perpetrated here, is people thinking that they're in recovery when they're not. And it's no fault of their own, but they don't understand it. No steps, yeah. No steps, no recovery, no program.
Let me toss in something. Page Roman numeral 22, XXII, contains what I believe is the most important phrase in the entire book. It's very cleverly hidden in the forward to the third edition, third paragraph. The basic principles of the AA program, it appears, hold good in individuals with different lifestyles. Just as the program has brought recovery to those with different nationalities. And then here's that phrase I'm talking about. It says the 12 steps that summarize the program. What that says is the 12 steps I see on the wall are a summary, that is the cliff notes. My first sponsor said if that was the whole program, we'd have a pamphlet instead of a book. Mm-hmm. So he also said if you take the steps off the wall, you get off the wall program. That I needed the expanded version. I needed the whole thing, not the cliff notes. I was a cliff notes kind of guy in school. You know how well that worked. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, something we unfortunately don't see anymore is the circle and the triangle. And the thing that we don't hear much about is Bill's last message, unity, service, and recovery. That makes me whole when I have those things. And I notice a difference when I don't have all those things. But I don't have the unity of you people in my life when I'm not having fellowship. And fellowship for me is going out for coffee. It's going out for dinner. It's coming out here and hanging out with these guys. It's going to the meeting early and staying late. I'll tell you what, it's not. It's not coming into the meeting late and dodging out before it's over or right away. You know, if you look at pack animals, we'll take the gazelle, right? The gazelle, they, as a rule, they stay in a pack, right? And they're safe. And this is where I need to stay is with you guys in the center here where it's safe. When I start winging around on the sides and I'm not doing fellowship, you know, and I'm not at least at some level trying to practice these principles in all my affairs, particularly 10, 11, and 12, I start wandering away from that pack and I'm going to get picked off by this disease. Just like the gazelle is going to get picked off by the lion or the tiger or what have you because he's wandered away from the pack. I got to stay with you people. You're the only ones that get me. I never felt like I belonged anywhere in my life till I came here. Does anybody relate to that? Yeah. I was always on the outside, and I'm looking in wondering what it's like to be you because you look like, right? You know, don't compare my insides to your outsides. You look like you got it together. I'll tell you what you don't look like. You don't look like how I feel. You don't look full of anxiety and fear. You don't look uncomfortable and unhappy with yourself. Me, wherever I'm at, I want to be somewhere else. Whatever I'm feeling, I want to feel something else, right? Unless it's full of anti-jack medication, right? And anti-jack medication takes on many forms. It takes on marijuana, alcohol, her, right? You know what I mean? Food and TV, all these things. Anyways, I got to stay within the unity service and recovery and have all aspects of my life. I got three questions that they're going to ask me on page 60, A, B, and C. I can't, he can, and I'm going to let him. If I can answer the affirmative of that, I'm ready for step three. I go over to step three on page 63. I take those steps. I get down to the bottom of the page, and they're giving me an option. As Scott told me, you have two options here when you want to start this inventory. It doesn't say I'm going to wait on that third step. It doesn't say anything about that. It gives me two references to time. It says, next, we launch out in a course of vigorous action. That's a reference to time. Next is next. We all know what that is. And then they give me another choice, and said, Scott said, well, you can do it next or at once. What's your choice to be?
Or anything in between. I gave you all the leeway.
That's true. You did give me a lot of leeway there. And I launched upon a personal inventory, you know, a cleaning house. I'm done with that for now. So, you know, I'm supposed to talk about essentially when and how to change sponsors. The first sponsor I had, James R. in Phoenix, was a beautiful man. He was a big book enthusiast, and he got me into the book right away, and he got me into service work right away, and I'm grateful to this day. There came a time, and I wasn't sure why, and it took many years to figure out, but it was just there came a reason why it was time for us to part ways. I come to find out now it's because he was overly exerting his religious beliefs on me. He was a devout member of a particular faith, and he was trying to input that into my recovery, and that didn't work for me. And it was time for me to move on. And it was, I tell you what, I'm going to tell the story just because it's cute. It was much like breaking up with my 15-year-old girlfriend, the way it was for me, because I was tied to this man. He was the first man that I had an intimate relationship with. And I understand what intimacy is today. I didn't back then. But I was close to him in a way I'd never been close to another man. And I had not talked to him for a while. We call it ghosting, right? I had ghosted him. I saw him at an AA dance, and I walked in the door, and I saw him, and he looked at me, and he smiled, because he knew where I was at. He knew I was sober, like, I don't know, like 14 months or something like that, and that I hadn't called him, and I was filled with guilt and shame and fear, and I didn't know how to do this thing, but he knew that the end had come. He knew more than I did, because he was properly armed with facts about himself, and he knew me, and he'd done the work. And I came up to him, and I started crying, and he reached and he hugged me, and we both sat there, and we cried. It was beautiful, and we said goodbye to each other. I told you why it was necessary for me to move on and find Scott as a sponsor. Now, when men come to me and say, "Listen, I'd like you to work with me, and this is not working," I said, "That's your decision to make. But I want you to go home, and I want you to think about that, and I want you to think about exactly why." And most of the time, they don't come back. And I'll see them at a meeting and say, "Thank you, I appreciate that." I have a tendency to balk at. To completely shut down a suggestion that I don't like, right? I'm sure nobody has done that, right? Scott has got some wisdom beyond explanation. I can't even articulate what he's done for me and what the knowledge that he has shared with us and what he has for us. But sometimes he sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher, you know? And I'm on the other end, right? I'm just trying to be honest here, and I'm sure you all have that experience. But the fact of the matter is, I need to listen to it. I don't have to like it. It's like the guy said, you don't have to like it. You just have to do it. So when people come to me and want to sponsor and they want to leave, and the decision has been made, I said, what you need to do is go to him, is make an appointment, call him up, and say, look, you get a few minutes. And they get together. I say, you need to thank him for his time. And then it's best for you to move on. And one of two things happen. Has been my experience when that situation takes place. One is, wow, that's great. I'm really happy for you to move on. I think this is a really good choice, and I support you 100%. Something along those lines. The other is, well, you know, what's the problem? What am I doing wrong? You really think this is a good decision? I got to remember, this is not about me. I also know I'm getting a lot more out of it than you are. It took me a long time to see this, but it's got nothing to do with me. I am just a tool, a messenger. I'm just a messenger here, you know, and if I can do this and we do this together and we break bread and we share tears and we share joys, we're going to be crying together. And if your experience is anything like mine, you're going to be sitting in a meeting sometime and you're going to grasp what this really thing is all about and the effect that these men that I've had the honor of helping me hits me, and I break down and have a gratitude attack. And I break down in tears. I do it on a regular basis, whether it's my gratitude for this program. Or this man here, I get tears of gratitude, but it has to be done. It has to be done maturely when it's time to move on. And I give them my blessings. Like I said, I let somebody go a couple months ago. He's thriving. I couldn't be any happier. This is not about possession. It's not about ego. It's not about pride. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and men like Scott. It is my honor, my privilege, and my duty, my responsibility to help another alcoholic. You can call it a debt, but I like doing it.
I've got a goal for the men I sponsor, is that they would outgrow me spiritually and have to move on to somebody to take them further than I can. I can't think of a more worthy goal. Other reasons for me to change sponsors, I lose respect for a sponsor. That happened once. That's a real good reason to change. Can't get a hold of them. You already talked about that. If I'm not growing, if I'm not learning anything, I need to first ask, am I the problem here? And if I'm not, I need to move on. My third sponsor, we called him Rusty. At the end of his drinking, he was drinking mouthwash mixed with Kool-Aid. And he wet his pants so many times his zipper rusted shut. And we nicknamed him Rusty in honor of the zipper. And when I moved on from him, for the rest of the time I knew him, he died just a couple of years ago. He used to ask me questions. And he was so proud that I had seen that I needed to move on, that I wasn't learning anything else. He took me as far as he could. And I think that's an important thing. And what Jack said is so beautiful. When I change sponsors, I thank them. First, I get the new one, and I say, thank you. Thanks for all the time. Thanks for all the effort you made. Thank you for being a tool in God's hand. Thank you. It's only fair for me to say I've asked someone else to sponsor me. We started well, end well. Don't let them fade away. Yeah. You still here?
Keep going. Chris, still an alcoholic.
He's got two pages of notes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm supposed to talk about something too. I want to go back to some of these things that were important to tell a new guy. I always tell him get a Facebook account. Like, that's pretty important, right? That's how I got my sponsor, was Marketplace. Facebook, Marketplace, go there. But this goes way beyond that.
What page is that on? Do you know where that is?
I'm not sure.
Go ahead. Fifth edition stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Fifth edition stuff.
Well, just look at, when I get a new guy, you know, the one thing that I seemed to have was time. And what I remember what I would do is I would go to places like this. WeJoy.org, and I would put on speakers, and I would be in the car, and I would be alone, and they would seep into my head, and they gave me alcoholism. And once I got alcoholism, I could start to hear in a way I'd never heard before, right? Because I'd made many things, you know, and Bill's story says business leaders were my heroes. Like, I had arrived, like, and I was so twisted up, but I started to hear in a very different way. I heard a guy say that if he was going to sit here, he was going to have a goal. In Alcoholics Anonymous, and he caught my attention because I'm an operations manager. It's what I do. I execute things. Right? I need plans. I need goals. I'm going to get somewhere. I'm a task-oriented guy, and I want results. That's the biggest thing. And he said that what he was looking for was a quiet mind and a loving heart. And I thought, my God, I've never been able to achieve that, and I would desperately like a piece of that. To slow down my mind and understand this L word that you guys keep talking about, because I don't have the experience where I had kids and I held them up and now I'm just overwhelmed by the joy of the world. Like, I had kids and thought, man, that's going to cost a lot of money. Like, I just have a very different experience than people, you know. So to hear these things, you know, every concept was so foreign to me, and I slowly started hearing the message, right? And that all came from tapers and talkers, and that's how I found Scott. I just happened to go on to one of, you know, my first sponsors said this: download this app, listen to these guys, they're good. And I just did what I'm told to do. That's all I've ever done in this program that's given me an opportunity to be here today, is just take a suggestion and do what I'm told. I don't know why I'm doing it. Maybe it has something to do with the bottom or a willingness or just a jumping off point. I don't know. All I can tell you is what happened. But I'm listening to Scott. I've been through the steps, but I didn't have that four-step experience he was talking about. Right? And he said, man, if you have not had one of these experiences, I hope you do. You know. And then he said something else weird. He said, we use our first and last name in case you need to come find me. And he said, I'm from Nashville. And I thought, well, I'm not far away. So I went to Facebook and put in Scott Lee Nashville. And he popped up, and he had friends that I had friends with that I knew were alcoholics. And the story begins. I reached out and I said, are you the guy? Crazy guy talking about a four-step. I thought, he won't know if or not the alcoholic guy I'm looking for. He won't know. But he said, yeah, and I started asking questions, you know, and I kept asking questions. And the only thing sometimes I know to do is ask questions and listen. And for some reason, I get to do that. And I kept asking questions. And I said, well, can I do this four-step thing you said was so important? And he said, yeah. Sure. Right after we do 1, 2, and 3. Right? Because we always start at the beginning of this thing, and then we go through these steps, and I remember the conversation. I was so scared. Jack said it's like when we first start dating that person that, you know, we're just so awkward. Like, I had to have a situation, because I knew I was going to pop the question. You know, it's like, it's coming, and I remember I was sitting and what's going on, and I called Scott, and I said, Scott, I got to ask you something. I said, are you willing to sponsor me? And then this is the comment I get. I love it. It says, well, if you weren't going to ask, I was going to tell you. You know, and the journey can begin. But I always tell the new guys, you know, get a quiet mind and a loving heart, right? If I sit here long enough, right, today I'll catch myself not needing to be anywhere, wanting for nothing. And I'll tell Scott, you know, I've caught myself again excited about nothing. You know, and for a guy like me, that's a big deal. I will find myself stepping out of a gas station and looking in the parking lot, not provoked by a sponsor, not because I'm going to a meeting, but looking out just to see a people and say, I wonder if I could help one of these people. Now, that may not be a big deal to you, but for a guy like me, that's called relief from the bondage of self. Right? Mm. That's called a psychic change. That's called something very different than the way I used to live. Right before you were in my way, today I'm trying to figure out how to put you there. Right, that's a big deal. So I always tell them, you know, get a Facebook account and start. Go to wejoy.org. I think it's fantastic. The one thing that happens is that Jack mentioned this, that I am a fast forgetter and a slow learner. I don't know if that's from the drugs and alcohol or it's just where it's at, but the other thing that was really important to me is when Jack and Scott and these guys get going, and they get going and they start talking like this, and they're such foreign concepts and they're real, you know, he took you to a page in the big book that early on he said this might be one of the most important parts of the book, the program that summarizes. Right, but right below that it says recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Right, I start to have those experiences in here, and he'll say things like get on a good team. Right, how important that was. So they told me my whole life, surround yourself by good people. I just couldn't. I didn't know how. I didn't know where to look. Right, and you guys give me the ability to start looking. But these messages are deep and profound. There's a message that every person in this path told me. My mother, the coaches, the teachers, the cops, they all said the same message, right? Help somebody else, listen more, follow the rules, do some simple stuff. I just couldn't hear them. And when I get here and I can finally hear, they're deep. So I would say one of the things that I'm most appreciative of is Scott's ability to repeat the message. I cannot tell. There's one. I've got it written down right now. It's in my big book. We must have covered it. I don't know, 17 times. And I would be like, can you say it one more time? And then he wouldn't just say it one more time. He would tell me a story about a time another guy had a problem and he explained it 1,001. And we were only on 51. And he would just give me that permission to keep coming back no matter how hard it was. When you start talking to me about principles that are so foreign to me, you know, it takes me such a long time, right? So the ability to be patient and repeat those things was important. And then I heard a guy in that thing, he said, follow my feet, not my mouth, right? And I started watching what Scott was doing, and what Scott was doing was a lot of work in the program. Like, he would send me tapes. The coolest thing I think I've received in AA so far is Scott had a tape. I wanted it. And the next thing I know, the cutest little USB drive shows up with a USB drive specific shipping thing with the UPS label in my mailbox. I remember being so overwhelmed at the thought, the gesture, the simplicity, and the message I knew was contained in that thing. I thought, this simple act, right? Because it was then I realized it was both things. It wasn't just follow my feet, not my mouth, right? When you find a good sponsor, you learn to trust both, right? They've walked the path, so now you can trust their mouth, right? I saw through actions that these things were true, and it just became, you know, a better plan, right? A design for living that really works.
You guys are embarrassing me using my name so much. I did the best I could with these people, folks. I really did. I think I think there are a handful of most important things that a sponsor can say. The first one is, I love you. God is love. When I give love, I give God. It is the highest gift. The second one is, I'm proud of you. I'm on a constant search for ways to tell guys I sponsor I'm proud of. It has to be honest. My favorite is the first time he tells me he lied to me. Page 23. Dead center of the page describes me and everybody I've ever worked with in a single sentence. Begins with the word once. Once in a while, he may tell the truth. Once in a while, maybe. Yeah. So the first time he tells me he lied to me, I'm always excited. I knew he was going to lie to me the day before I met him. He's an alcoholic. That's what they do. You know. And he calls me and says, man, I called you yesterday. I said I went to 7 meetings last week and I only went to 6. I say, wow, I celebrate your recovery. Look how far you have come. Months ago when you got here, you would have lied for credit when you could have got cash for the truth because you're such a compulsive liar. And here you are with a little thing like one meeting, and you have grown so much spiritually that is eating on you, and you don't know how I'm going to respond. And look what you've done. I celebrate you, and look how far you've come. Two things. One, that's honest. Two, never again will he think, well, there's no reason to call my sponsor. I know what he's going to say, because he didn't have any idea I was going to say that. Constantly looking for ways to say I'm proud of you. Constantly doing that. I do that for everybody, most especially the guys I sponsor. And the third and most important thing I can say to somebody I sponsor is, I don't know. For those of you who don't think you're ready to sponsor, it's okay to not know. Just because your sponsor had all the answers when you were new, and you don't think you have all the answers, it's not a good reason not to sponsor. If I say I don't know, I say I'll find out. I got a phenomenal, he said, team. First word, first step, we. Recovery is a team sport. I am on a fabulous team. Absolutely fabulous. And if I don't have the answer, boy, I got a teammate that does. And it ain't going to take me long to get it for you. I'll tell you something that came to me the other day. I'm so glad this came up. I do not sponsor ladies, but I got a handful that used me for an advisor. The closest one lives 2 states away. That's just about right. And but this one of the ladies that she was working with had prostituted herself. And she's in step 9 trying to figure out how to make amends to herself about that. Pretty interesting question. And this is what she came up with. She figured out how much money she'd made doing that. Then she is donating that amount of money to Magdalene House and some other charities. And what she said was, I sold my self-esteem. I am buying it back. And I want to share that every time I get a chance. That's fresh. That's maybe 120 days old. That just got here. So many of our people, plenty of guys have too. Plenty of us have done those kinds of things. You can get it back. Don't doubt the power here. Don't doubt the power. Another thing Jack's already talked on is I got to share my mistake. I sit at the feet of the masters. I have run them down. You've heard some of the names. I have run them down. I've called them. I've asked questions. I should have a tremendous wisdom. But the most important things I bring to the men I sponsor are my pain and my mistakes. Because that makes it okay for them to be real. I must do that. I do not. I've got an alter ego I call Saint Scott of the microphone. He's a very ugly fellow. And if I don't bring them my mistakes and my pain, he can get back out. And I do not to be impressed with myself. Jack touched on it a minute ago. I need to be reminded I am not the living water. I'm the pipe. On a good day, I'm a plumbing fixture. And I was close friends with Sandy Beach. Oh, please tell me you must know that name. If you don't, erase those other names. Don't go to bed tonight. Anyway, I had Sandy trapped in a booth at lunch one day, just the two of us. And I get around someone like him, I got nothing to say. I got some questions. I got nothing to say. And I got him talking. And about halfway into his story, I interrupted. I said, Sandy, you're a great storyteller. He said, yeah, that's my gift. And he just went on. And I thought, you're the only guy I know that's not impressed by Sandy Beach. You are the only one. And he was not. I lust after that kind of humility. I don't have it, but I lust after it. He was so peaceful. I think he was impressed with how God had used him and worked through him, but he's not impressed with himself. Kind of an interesting perspective. And then I'm supposed to talk for a minute about standing assignments. Here, the standing assignments I have for men I sponsor. One, don't give your phone number to new men. Don't do it. Exchange with them and take responsibility for calling that new guy twice in the next 3 days. Standing assignment. I have that assignment myself. Work hard on staying in today. Use the word today frequently in all three of your vocabularies. You have three. Speaking, praying, and thinking. Get the word today active in all three of those. Critically important. I want you to take a meeting into a jail or a prison once. Once. People are going to get hooked on corrections, get hooked the very first trip. Just go once. Not ask them to commit. And I had a guy I sponsored, I forbid him to go back to jail. He was terrified. He went with me three times, and he was terrified. I said, we got other things you can do. This is not your thing. But I want you to go once. If justice had been served, I'd be doing life in a military prison. I'll talk about that tonight. When I get a new guy to sponsor, I give him phone numbers of guys like this, guys I sponsor. So I want you to talk to at least two of these every day. You don't know what to say. I didn't ask you to know what to say. I asked you to talk to him. Call him. Say, Scott's my sponsor. He said for me to call you. I called. They'll take it from there. Don't worry about it. When I get a new guy to sponsor, I tell him I want to talk to you every day for the next 6 months. Mark your calendar. And if you don't call me on Wednesday, I'll call you Thursday morning at 6. You in jail? You in the hospital? Why didn't I get my call yesterday? Every day means every day. We don't miss any days. One of the most powerful things I've ever come across, and this has worked well a couple of times, some guy that's in and out, I'll say to him, if you go back out again without talking to me first, that's not a voicemail, that's not a text, if you go back out without talking to me first, I will no longer sponsor you, because it will mean that I am not the right sponsor for you. That's exactly what that will mean. That does a couple of things. One of them is it puts the pressure on him to stay committed. The other is, I may not be the right sponsor for him. I'm a fabulous sponsor for some people. I ain't the right sponsor for some others. This may be one of those. So, you know, the first rule of cavalry is when the horse is dead, dismount. Well, this is a dead horse. Let's try something else. Take it away.
Thanks. Thank you, Scott. Standing assignments. I'm going to take a little different take on this. I'm going to share a couple of things, and I'm going to start with page 96, at the top of page 96. And again, Scott brought this to my attention. I think I could count three people that I've let go over the years. I'm a stubborn son of a gun, and a lot of it's got to do with ego, I'm sure, but a lot of it is I care, but I got to know when to let go. And as Scott said, it's time for you. Maybe I'm not the best sponsor for you. I've let two go since I've been with Scott. I let one person that I recall, and maybe more. I mean, it's just what I recall before I met Scott. So I've let a total of three go. But when it's time for me to let go of somebody, Scott's well aware of it. I'm going to start off with this. One of the things that I've learned when I start with somebody, when I first start working with them, I say, look, what you say to me is in confidence. We get that on the table right away. You got to know that what you say to me is not going to be shared. I have experienced in a meeting where somebody's fifth step was shared by their sponsor in a meeting. That can't happen.
No.
The relationship between a sponsor and a sponsee is based on a few things, but one is absolute trust and the other is communication. You know, it amazes me that to this step, I'm 61 years old and I'm still really learning the importance of communication in all my relationships. But if I want to start that communication, it starts with something small and getting to know somebody and calling me every single day. Every single day at a set time. And I talk about their schedule right away. I want their schedule. I want to know what's going to, because I'm going to ask them to call me every day. And because I know what their schedule is, I know between 9 and 9:30 every night they can call. So I can say, look, you know what, 9 to 9:30 works for me. Does that work for you? Well, I already know what the answer is, right? Yeah, it does. Okay, great. Now we've agreed upon a time that we can talk, and I'm going to dedicate myself to that. And 90% of the time I do. Things come up, right? Sometimes I'm on the phone longer with somebody. Sometimes work comes up, whatever, and I will call them back. But when do I let them go? The other thing I talk about is it is in confidence what we share. But I'm going to be, if I share anything at all, and it's going to be with your permission, it's going to be with my sponsor, because I want to know how I can help you. Because you're going to come across things that maybe I don't have enough experience with, or I want to be able to help, and I'm not sure I can. I may say go somewhere else. I don't have that answer, but I'm going to go to my sponsor. I spend more time talking to Scott about the men that I sponsor. If we have a conversation for 20 minutes, I'm going to tell you 15 minutes of that is about the men that I sponsor. And I didn't see that for the longest time, but I realized that's a lot of growth for me. As you mentioned, I'm wrapped up in self. I may not be much, but I think about me all the time, right? That's changed quite a bit. Because the time I spend talking to the men is supposed to be my mentor, is how I help these other men, and checking on this is where he's at, this is where he's at. What do you think about this? I'm thinking, I spend my time trying to, with my sponsor, talking about them. That's a pretty big deal for something like me. So when it comes time to let somebody go, and I want to confer with Scott about it, he's well aware of what's going on already. But there's the only guidelines I know about, that I know about in the book about letting somebody go, is talked about on page 96 at the very top. It says, do not be discouraged if a prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. It's telling me right there, I'm supposed to go out and find these people. Now, I understand the context has changed a little bit since this was written, but it's a lot easier now. We've got all kinds of detoxes and hospitals, and we've got people and other meetings we can go to find these unsuspecting newcomers. You're sure to find someone desperate enough.
Yeah.
Desperation. What's that, 100 cc's of desperation?
Yeah, every newcomer, one thing, it'd be 500 cc's of desperation. Just load them up.
Desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. I'm a patient man, but I got to admit, sooner at some point, I got to say, maybe I'm just not the right person for you. I want to help you. Now, that doesn't mean I kick him to the curb. What it does mean is, says, look, you know what? I want you to call Jim. I think Jim could be very helpful to you, or this guy here, and I'll give him some options and put him, because I want to cut him to the curb, right? And I'm not going to do it immediately. I'm going to say, look, we need to, before I do that, I'm saying, we need to look at this relationship. Let's sit down and talk about this, because this is not working for either one of us right now. So let's see what we can do, like any other relationship. What's going on? Let's talk about it. I'm not going to call him and say, look, you need to find somebody else, blah, 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 blah. That's about making it about me again. That's ego. This is about love and tolerance and compassion. All right? Again, we began this thing the right way. Let's end it the right way if we have to end it. But before we end it, let's see if there's a solution to this problem. You know, I just did that recently with somebody. I said the same thing to him. I said, look, if you got to call me before you drink. If you can't call me before you drink, verbally, not a friggin' text, and don't get me started on that stuff. If you can't call me before you first pick the first drink, it's probably evident to both of us that I may not be the right man for you. I know some men that could be. I know some men that could be. Let's talk about that, and I'll make the transfer. I'm not going to leave them. I got to remember what it's like to be new in this program, or with 10 years about this program. We all have our insecurities, right? We all have our fears. We all have some kind of an abandonment issue right there. I got to keep that in mind when I'm talking to these people. That's why I call them first. My first sponsor, I was 88. It was 40 days out of treatment before I actually called my sponsor, and that was hard. That phone was heavy. That was heavy. I got to remember that. What does it take for me to call him? It's not a problem at all. Hey, remember, it's Jack. We met at the meeting yesterday. I really loved what you had to say. Are you going to a meeting on Friday? No, I tell you what, I'm going to my home group. It's pretty lighthearted. You want me to pick you up? We'll go down there. I ask a lot of closed-end questions. For you who don't know what that means, look it up. But I ask a lot of closed-end questions. I don't give them an out. You know, I don't know everything, but I'm pretty sure that this guy with 15 minutes of sobriety, I probably know a little bit about more how to help him and what he needs today than he does, if his mind was anything like mine in the beginning. Standing assignments, yeah, you call every day and I find a time. And I do that for a few reasons. I have people, I don't know how many times a week, I have somebody come and ask me to sponsor them. And I would like to help all of them, but a lot of them really don't want help. A lot of them just want to get the girlfriend, the wife, or the judge off the back, or the police, or whoever it is. They want a SINO, S-I-N-O, a sponsor in name only, right? Someone they can sign off on. I'm not that guy. But I don't know that unless I know you're committed enough to pick up the phone. If you can't pick up the phone for 5 minutes a day at a designated time that I know you're available and call me every day for 7 days, how can I possibly help you anyways? How can I help you anyways? But also what it's going to do is open up that channel, begin a relationship which starts with communication, and we get to know each other. So when the poo-poo does hit the fan, and it will, you've got no problem picking up that phone and calling me and say, I'm showing my butt here. I don't know what to do. Fantastic. This is great. I did the same thing. I'm going to wrap up with this. Anytime I've called what I thought was a tragedy or I'm in tears or some what I perceive as a dreadful thing and I call up Scott, one of the first things he says, boy, I bet that felt really good to get that off your chest. And by the time the conversation is over, we're usually both laughing because he's done it or we find the humor in it. I'm not perfect. I'm growing one day at a time. Some days I'm growing a lot, some days not so much. But I plug away one day at a time. And the consistency there was prayer, sponsorship, and helping other people, trying the best I can one day at a time to help somebody else. I got to get out of myself. It's a physical action. I can't think my way into better actions, but I can act my way into better thinking. So I actually have to physically be doing things to get out of myself.
I went to sponsor number 4. And I said, rah, 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 this guy I'm sponsoring. What should I do? And he said, drop him. I said, I'm serious. He said, I'm serious. I said, I don't get it. He said, what do you ask him to do that he's not doing? I said, well, call me every day. Call his parole officer. Go to a meeting every day. Start his 4th step and use the directions to open and close his days. And how much of that's he doing? He's not doing any of it. You're not his sponsor. He is. You are his fire chief. And when his tail feathers are ablaze, he calls you and siphons off some of your serenity and goes right back to doing it his way. Could you stay sober on the program he's working? I don't think so. Can he? I don't think so. You're probably right. And when he drinks again, I want you to be able to sleep knowing you've told him the truth. Because the price for his next relapse could be all the way to his death. And you need to be able to sleep knowing you've told him the truth. How do you feel when you work with him? I said, I feel like they pulled the corks out of my heels and the blood ran out. I said, how do you feel when you work with Bill Kay? I said, oh, he lights me up like Chinese New Year. Really? What are you asking Bill to do that he's not doing? He's doing it all. Uh-huh. Sponsorship's a two-way street. If it's not working for one, it's not working for either. It's really that simple. And you should get a spiritual lift, not every time you talk to a sponsor or a sponsor, but almost every time. There'll be times when I'm getting in the right place. It should run in the high 90s. And if you're not getting that, it's not working for either one. And we cannot afford to let them fade away. I've done a number of weekends with some folks that are rather well known in our fellowship. And a lot of times one of the questions in the ask at basket is, how many do you sponsor? And we used to give that and say about half. And we used to laugh at that. That ain't funny. Because if we let them fade away, I don't want him to sit on a bar stool believing he tried AA and it didn't work for him, so there's no reason to go back. If I let him fade away, I will allow that to happen. And I go to him. Anger and love never travel together. They're mutually exclusive. Sadness and love do. And I go to him and I say, I have a great sadness. And my sadness is you're not allowing me to sponsor you. I cannot continue to wear the name badge because you're not allowing me to perform the function because you're not doing what I ask. 2, you're not in AA. You're in the fellowship, but the program's the 12 steps and you haven't done them. And this conversation isn't for you. It's for me. Hopefully it's for you. It's definitely for me so that I can sleep. Because I don't think what you're doing is going to work. I hope it does. I really do. But if it doesn't, I want you to be able to come back. Job 1 is the sponsors to love them. Job 2 is to take them through those steps at a pace that makes sense to me based on what I know about their life. If they won't let me do job 2, job 1 remains to love them. Job 2 becomes to make it easier for them to come back. And the first piece of that is to tell him he was never here. If I don't tell him, he may not know. And what I'm hoping he's going to say is, oh, God, no, don't drop me. I'll do anything. I say, okay, the definition of anything hasn't changed, but I'll give it to you one more time. This is what I expect. This is what you can expect. I do that several times, and then I make it stick. Dropping him. It's the right thing for both of us. The first guy I did that with, next time I saw him was a few days later. He came through the door, glassy-eyed, bounced off at both door jams, and said I was arrested out of the meeting. Only time I've ever seen it. We shared a parking lot with a grocery store. His car was parked up against somebody else's in the parking lot. And the police officers knew where we were and came in and literally arrested this guy out of the meeting. And I did not throw away his shot at recovery by dropping him. He did. I gave him a chance to come back by making sure he knew, 1, he did not have a sponsor, and 2, he was not in the program. if we don't do that. We sign their death warrant. I think I've coached everybody I sponsor through doing that at least once. Mm-hmm. And I almost always say, God, this breaks my heart. I say, yet better. What's wrong with you if it doesn't? And yet there's a great spiritual principle. And that principle is that if a course of action is right for one person involved in a situation, it's right for everybody involved. They may not like it. It's as right for him to be dropped as it is for me to drop him. It's right for both of us. Think about that. It's not pretty, and it's not fun, and it is so the right thing. I've got to give him a chance to come back by making sure he knows he was never here.
Incredibly important. Jump in here.
Go.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. I'd like to jump in on a couple things. I got to know, so something changes, in for me, I should say, something changed in me the first time I buried one of the men that I sponsored. After the funeral, I got home and I sat down, and I knew, you know, I didn't kill him or anything like that, but the question was raised in my mind, did I do everything I could for him? Was I honest with him? I couldn't answer that completely, because I was still too concerned about him liking me. It's not my job to have them like me. That's not part of the deal. Why is that important? You know, a good friend's going to tell me the truth, an acquaintance is going to tell me what I want to hear. I need to tell them what they need to hear with compassion. Honesty without compassion is brutality.
Yeah,
it's not. I'm going to tell you that I don't particularly like going to standing over a grave and saying, I probably could have done more. I probably could have been more honest. Because when they're dead, they don't have to worry about those concerns, right? I have to move on and take those lessons and go forward. I've got to know that I gave him every opportunity to come back, to every opportunity to help him. And if I can't help him, to guide him someplace where he can. I got to do it with love and compassion. And when they do go out, I got to make it easy for them to come out.
You bet.
I got a beautiful man right now, and the rumor is he's in treatment again. How hard it is to come into this room originally. Can imagine, and maybe some of you have experienced coming back in here. How hard is that? I got to make it easy for them. I send them, in the beginning, I'll text them or call them twice a week. Say, hey, just want to know that I love you, we miss you, and whenever you're ready, I'm going to be here in every way I can. And I'll do that twice a week for a couple of weeks, and then it'll drop down to a week, and then it'll down to a month. But I make it very easy. I make it very easy for them to come back, because I know how hard it is. I don't want to live with that regret. And I'll share this last thing. A gentleman by the name of Matt, who I could not get him to get into the steps. He's the only guy I know who got two DUIs in one night and still drove away and had a car. I find that admirable personally. But, I do. I mean, I don't know what to say about it.
I believe you. Go on with your story. We're out of time.
He died. He died. And he purposely ran a motorcycle into a telephone pole and killed himself. And I went to the funeral and I got done and I was at home and licking my wounds, and his mother called me. And she said, look, I just want you to know how much you meant to him and how much we helped you. How grateful we are for you helping. Just doing what they told me to do. It's a beautiful experience to see a fellowship of men grow up around you. And I don't know what that is. You know where it's at. But it's damn beautiful. I'm uniquely qualified because of my pain that I thought I could never live down or live with is now a tool to help other people. Help others avert death and misery.
One of the questions I ask when somebody calls me with a question, if you have to stand over this person's casket 2 weeks from today, what are you going to wish you'd said or done this day? Whatever that is, do it. Don't put yourself in a position to stand over that casket wishing you had fill in the blank. It's a great question as a sponsor to ask back to someone who's brought you a question. What are you going to wish you'd done if you have to stand over that casket? Get that done. As far as when they come back, I always tell them, welcome home. God, I'm so glad you made it back. Let me tell you something. If anybody gives you the smallest bit of garbage about having gone back out, speed dial me and hand them the phone, and I will crush them before your very eyes. Because we don't do that here. We do not shoot our wounded here. And if you just come back, I'll do everything I can to make it easy for you to stay. Everything. Everything. And I will not allow that. I've been making that offer for over 30 years. I've never had to make it good because we're not that kind of people. But that's the number one thing somebody's gone back out is concerned about, is the grief they may get coming back. And I'm taking that right off the table for them. It's a lifesaver. Please tell them that. And tell them with the force you just heard from me so they really know that thing sticks. Boy, if somebody does that, I'll have them. I want to share with you my favorite sponsee phone call I have ever gotten. This guy had doubled, way into double digits, and I answer the phone, and I'm going to have to clean this up quite a bit. You'll get the idea. And I said, hey, and he said, is today a good day for me to tell my wife she's an ignorant witch? It went on a lot longer than that, but you get the general idea. And I said, hold, please. And I gave him a 10 count. And I said, I just checked, and today it's not. He said, are you sure? I said, hold, please. And I gave him a 5 count. I said, yeah, I just checked. I'm absolutely sure. Okay, thank you. Goodbye. That was the entire conversation. Think about it. Look what happened. He's about to destroy his life. He realizes it. He calls my number. God blesses me. I'm good. I'm really good. I ain't anywhere near that good to say 10 count, 5 count. And he goes back and does not destroy his life. The second guy I sponsored that made it, not too long before he died, he said he had taken the greatest sponsor call of all time. I said, he said, no, get ready. I said, okay, I'm ready. Sponsee says, I'm frightened. He said, what are you afraid of? He says, I'm afraid my fiance's husband is stalking me. Now, if you're new, don't go home and tell that to your neighbor, okay? Because your neighbor is not going to laugh, all right? That's how we spot them when they come sneaking in here, is they don't know when to laugh. We laugh at things that other people don't think are funny. You got a couple of minutes here?
I do.
Okay, we got a lot to cover. Go for it.
I'll go quick. I won't talk about dropping guys because it is just gut wrenching, and I have to call Scott every time and be like, "What do I do? I don't want to." And you know, so I'll stay away from that, and I'll just talk briefly because are we done at 2?
I think we can go as long as we want, right?
Tom? For the sake of time, I know everybody's probably, you know, we've got stuff and family and all that good stuff, so we've got some questions, but I would share some of these standing assignments, because I think they're important. Hmm. I only say that because they have helped me so much, so what I love about any of this is when it has helped me is giving it away, because I know from my own experience what it might do for you or for the people that you deal with, and I remember when I would go into any new situation, I would call Scott, and he would say, well, just make sure you're always asking a question is, what best do they need, right? How can you show up and serve them? And I would do that before every Thanksgiving and every trip and every meeting and every, I would ask this question is, how can I best show up for them? What do they need? What does he need? And I give this to all my, you know, any sponsee that I'm working with, I tell them what they say, I'm going to a wedding or out to a movie or on a date, I always take that opportunity to say to stop and ask the question is, look around the room and ask, what best do they need? Because that's shown up so many times. I've caught myself doing weird things like the dishes for my sister-in-law, right? That's not what I do. We eat and then we sit there and talk about mainly stuff in football. And I found myself over there figuring out, how best do I make this a better experience for her, right? That's a big deal. Scott told me this one. He said, have them write down a definition, look it up, and send it to you. Now, I prefer that you carry around a little dictionary that looks back at the big book. But, man, do I learn a lot when they do that. You know, I don't know if that's about them. I don't know if that's about me. But I'll tell you what, every time they're sending me these snippets from the big book, I have just this fantastic experience going back and looking at, like, what did that word mean to me? And then the other thing is the very first sponsor that I showed him and said, I need help with. He said, okay, do these simple things. He's like, we're going to go to meetings, we're going to pray, and you're going to read 84 through 88 every day. I said, okay. So I went home, and I read 84 through 88 every day. Right? And I did this for a long time, and I'll bet I didn't miss many days well past a year. And he finally asked me the question, and it came up. He said, "Are you still reading 84 through 88? And I was so excited because I'd done so good. And we're past a year, and he's like, "Why are you still doing that?" It's like, there's a whole book, man. Like, being so disappointed. I was like, "Are you kidding me? I have read this every day of my life." But man, the beauty of, like, what are on those pages, right, to this day is what Scott was talking about, right? That 10 count, that 5 count. When I can insert a small pause in my life, things change. I heard a guy say this. He said, the pause doesn't mean I lose the right to react. I can still go be as stupid as I want to. I can burn the village down. But all we're saying is just put the pause in and see if you still want to strike the match. Right? Many times I don't do that, right? And it taught me that. So I know for a fact that if I can do it, they can do it, right? So I always give them that assignment, one, just because it gave me that thing to cling to, right? And then it taught me so many lessons. The other one is when I get big book lessons, standing at Shimon is that we share those, right? A big book experience are some of my favorite. It was at a men's retreat this year, where a guy blew my mind with a simple statement. You got to go early in the book to find it. It's on the very first page of the forward to the first edition. It says this. It says, "And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all." Now, I used to read that as, if you take the steps, you wouldn't be such a problem. And if my wife would take them, we would have way less problems. And then a guy read this thing a different way. He said, no. He said, "When you take the steps, everyone benefits from you not being the best." Right? And I thought, man, you know, I unsupervised, I can interpret this thing a very certain way. And with you, right, you helped me understand that there's selfishness, self-centeredness. That was the root of my problem, right? Hmm. But you guys helped me see that there's a better way to do this. So I always share those lessons because I know for sure they've meant a lot to me.
Two of the other things I was going to cover. One is sponsoring somebody's long-term sobriety. Charlie Parker, if you don't know that name, Austin, Texas, don't go to bed. Just died a few months ago. And one of his sponsees of 29 years asked me to sponsor him. Happy to. So how do you sponsor somebody with 29 years? And the answer is, you take them through the 12 steps. I'm a one-trick pony. God, it's a fabulous trick. I just got to one. And I've been taking them through the steps. Not at the speed, not with the pressure, not the kinds of things. I talk to him a lot about sponsorship. I make sure that he's actually sponsoring the guys, what we just talked about, dropping the ones that aren't here, goosing the ones that are, make sure that everybody's doing just things like that. And the other thing is about long-distance sponsorship. I currently sponsor as many men in other countries as I do in Metro Nashville, where I live. But they've all got time. And only one of them, Oleg from Kiev, Ukraine, I raised him from a pup. He was going through treatment in Nashville. And 17 years ago, and I still sponsor him. But all of the others with long-term recovery have come to me, I'm sorry, with long distance, came to me with considerable time. And I talk to them frequently on a one-on-one basis. We use the Zoom thing, but about four times a month, it varies a little bit, I do a Zoom meeting just for the men I sponsor. No one else is ever welcome. And I try to do two Saturdays a month at 8 in the morning and two Monday afternoons at 4:30. And the reason is because I got people kind of spread all over the globe. And so 4:30 in the afternoon is midnight for a couple of those guys. So, and on the Saturday ones, we're coming, we take a random section from As Bill Sees It. And on the Monday ones, we're coming straight to the big book. We're well into the stories now. So get them together as community. I also own outright a men's retreat. I'm not even ashamed of it. We meet the second weekend in November. It's a man I sponsor and a few very close friends, 30 guys. That's all I got time, all I got room for. So I get them together and have a sense of community. Because a lot of these guys are alone with that big book in their hand. And nobody else around them has done the step work. And they're dying from don't drink and go to meetings. And they need a sense of community. So we get a chance to do that, and it gives us all a chance to be together. Wow. The other piece I wanted to touch on was when I invite God into these processes, I have a wisdom and a power vastly beyond my own. Mm-hmm. And I'll share a couple of examples where I might ask for a show of hands. Who's had this experience? Somebody asked you a question. The moment before they asked you, you did not know the answer. You open your mouth and not BS, but a piece of the great golden truth that you didn't know falls out. Who's had that one? Look at this. Look at this. Yeah. It's always that way. Yeah. And a lot of times, 3 hours later, I don't even know what it was. Because it wasn't of me, it was through me. Yeah. I've got a couple of them that I remember, and I'm going to share them with you. One of the guys called me, rawr, 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 this guy in my home group. And I said, I heard myself say, is it one of our assignments to learn to love the unlovable? Mm-hmm. And he and I both said, wow. Because neither one of us knew that. And I had one not too long ago. He finished the prayer portion of the resentment inventory. I hope you know what I'm talking about. And he said, all the resentments are all gone. And I said, great, we're going to move on. He said, no, I'm afraid they might come back or I might get some new ones. And I heard myself say, stop solving problems you don't have. Man, I think that'll be on the wall next to Easy Does It. Stop solving. Quit trying to figure it all out and get back into today and let's move on. Things like that will happen to you if you're sponsoring. This wisdom beyond your own will come out. And a lady asked me after a meeting one time. She said, I hear about expectations and hope. They're both about the future. What's the difference? And I heard myself say, expectations are specific, come from my head where my disease continues to reside, and I really premeditated resentments because I'm going to be mad if I don't get them. Hope comes from my heart. It's based on the simple fact that a loving God holds my future. And she and I both said, wow, because I didn't know that. That's part of what happens. You get out here and do this thing, and these magnificent gifts just fall out of the sky at some of the strangest times. I don't create them, but sometimes I get to be a tool in the master's hand. What do you got, Jack?
We're done on that stuff, right?
Yeah, we're probably done. Yeah.
I want to share this.
Yeah, go.
We got the Ask It Basket, page 124.
Yeah.
This is a good summary of my responsibility and an example of the relief I get from it. I'm trying to do this dry. I don't know. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family, which has been relieved, owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness. That's minimal promise.
Yeah.
With it, you can avert death and misery for them.
There's a piece in there that's so cleverly concealed to me. It says, owe something to those who have not. The people who carried this message to me, I don't owe them a thing. I owe them nothing. They were overpaid. They were a tool in God's hand in my life, and they knew it. They were overpaid. I don't owe them a thing. I owe it to the next new guy in my home group. That's why I can never be repaid. If you dig hard, you'll see that in there. Kind of powerful. You got something else?
No.
I was at a gated community one time. That's a state prison. And we were doing a page 112 meeting. For those of you who don't know, the first three words on page 112 are read this book. And we open our men's retreats for that. Here are the rules. You give us a page number. You give us a second to get to that page. You read us a paragraph or less from one place and tell us why you read it. You got 3 minutes. We skip all over the book. I was doing that at the state prison where they had books. Page 456, bottom. AA has accomplished so many things in my life today. It's given me my sanity and all-around sense of balance. Now, willing to listen, take suggestions. I found the process of discovering who I really am begins with knowing who I really don't want to be.
Ooh.
If you're new, it's what the first 5 steps are about. About finding out who you don't want to be. Bring to mind the 2 or 3 worst things you've ever done. The fact that you think they were worse things means that's not who you are. That's who you're not. Because if that's who you really are, you wouldn't think of them as worse things. If you'll allow us, we'll teach you here through the process of these steps how to quit doing who you're not, how to repair the damage for having done who you're not, and who you really are will emerge from the ashes like the phoenix. And that ain't poetry. It's simple fact. That is just simply what we do here. I want to thank Damon so much for recording this for us. I think it's a jewel. We've got a couple of questions up here. I'll take the important one here first, and then Jack can do the other one. It says, what do you do if you're a Georgia fan, but your sponsor's a Tennessee fan? I can help you with that. Admit that you're wrong. Thanks for asking.
Just go right to the fourth column.
Go ahead, Jack. What do you got? I love that question. Okay, if this isn't fun, I can't do it. That was a great question. Thank you.
The question is, what is working a program? How do you lay that out for a new sponsee? Working a program. I think working is the first thing I do is just the word working. I don't think that's the right word there. I thought I worked something for a long time, but it's what I've done is just done what they said. It becomes habit, and I live it to the best of my ability. It doesn't mean I do it perfectly well, but it's just become habit. I suppose it's work. I don't know. But I think that what it proposes, what it brings up to me is, I'm a big explainer. I like to communicate things. I like things communicated to me and explained to me, so I assume other people like that. I've learned that's maybe not the best presentation for some people, especially our very, very intellectual people, and I don't tell them what we're doing. I just tell them to do it. I don't know. Probably the last 5 minutes I've taken through the steps didn't know they were doing the fourth step, and they were doing the fourth step. Here's the problem I have. When I have too much information, I start overanalyzing, and I start getting into what the outcome is going to be. What does that look like? And I get into expectations and guessing, and I get way out of today, and I lose the whole... I don't need to know it. It's like my first sponsor told me, you don't have to understand this. You don't have to think it's a good idea. You just do it. You don't have to even think it's right. You don't have to understand it. That was my big thing. I had to understand it because I lived in fear. If I can understand it, I can control it. I can ask the right questions. Doesn't matter. I've given that job up in the third step. The outcome in my life is none of my business. I gave it up in the third step. I'm in the action business, and I do it. I take men through the steps at the rate, you know, that we talked about earlier in the book, in such a way that is unique to that person. It's the same actions, but it changes in its delivery based on the person to meet their needs. It's my job to meet them where they're at because they're not all the same. Working a program, I don't need to lay it out to them. They're going to get it. I'll end with this, that you know, you touched on this. I don't know. One of Howard's guys used to sponsor me, and he, when I first took him on, he said, read 84 to 88 every day for 30 days straight. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. I like assignment. That's black and white. I can do that. And I want to do it and make him happy, and I want to look good, right? And then he said, and if you skip a day, start over. Just shot me down. I read that thing I don't know how many times over. I don't think I ever did read it consistently for 30 days. But that's okay. One day I turned around and I realized I was actually, first I realized that, you know, you're supposed to be doing these things. It's not an assignment to read. This instruction manual. Oh, I have to implement this. Wow. Right, I'm not so swift sometimes. You got to actually do these things. And I did it. And then it became habit. It's about in the delivery. The program, as we talked about, is the steps. Just take them through the steps. Give yourself permission to make mistakes. Use your sponsor. Admit when you're wrong. Bring your mistakes to them. And thank God for the humility, that what little of humility I still possess, to be able to do that.
He mentioned Howard, by the way. If that doesn't mean anything to you, it's Howard P. Howard Polans, Gilbert, Arizona. Don't even think about going to bed tonight without getting at least two of Howard's talks. Howard is my spiritual advisor for 25 years. Howard will convince you in the first minute and a half of his talk he's just barely smart enough to chew and swallow. And he may have been the most intelligent man I ever talked to. He had it hidden. phenomenal individual. Page four, I'm going to close. You know the two most often told lies in AA? I'll be brief. And I'll close with this. Anyway, I will close with this. Page 457, also out of the same gated community. Last paragraph. From experience, I realized I cannot go back and make a brand new start, but through AA, I can start from now and make a brand new end. That's what this whole package is about. We invited God, and I think He came. And I'm going to close in a very unusual manner. Please remain seated. Don't take anybody's hand. I think we're the only people in the world that use the Lord's Prayer that don't think the author did a very good job with it and had to add something at the end. I've always thought amen was the last word. And what I'd like to suggest we do, each in our own way, thank Him for this time. And they will slowly, you guys did good, slowly whisper the Lord's Prayer. Amen is the last word. Let's stop after amen and have a moment of silence and feel the love in this room. It's almost, I can almost lean into it. I can feel it. And I'll give you a couple of moments like that and let you know when that portion's over. Let's take a moment and thank Him for coming. Bless us all. Safe travel. Thank you. Good job, guys.